This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Welcome to Campus Voices, a program where we take a look at what's going on in the Lexington and UK campus community. I'm your host, Maggie Davis, and today we're discussing the steady rise of artificial intelligence over the past few decades. This technology is frequently used in day-to-day life without people really even noticing. Some of its most notable inventions include search engines, autonomous cars, medical diagnoses, image recognition, and many more. Over the last few decades, the technology has begun to integrate into modern culture. Now, people rely on it every day. However, there are some facets of life that have remained untouched by the surge of artificial intelligence, also known as AI. One major example is within the retail sector of business. Stores are beginning the process of becoming AI-driven. WRFL reporter Quinn Brown explains the effect it might have on future business operations.
Consumer spending is the primary driver of economic growth in the U.S. This makes every fluctuation in retail sales important to a multitude of businesses, manufacturers, suppliers, and logistic companies, as well as all industries that support them and benefit from strong retail profits. Retailers are now turning to artificial intelligence to help protect profits and improve the customer experience. They can use AI to reduce losses resulting from error, faulty processes, and intentional fraud. According to the 2018 National Retail Security Survey from the National Retail Federation, more than 50% of retail shrink, the difference between actual on-hand inventory and the inventory level recorded in the computer system, was due to employee theft or paperwork errors. These type of losses leave a data trail that can be detected through data analytics. The investment in these technologies may push employment sectors into being ran artificially. For WRFL, I'm Quinn Brown.
A few interesting things I want to get to, obviously, but first I want to touch on who we have with us today. As always, we have a couple of experts here in the studio with us, and today we're going to be hearing from UK Assistant Professor in Computer Science, Brent Harrison. Dr. Harrison's research interests include different types of human behavior and decision-making data that can be used to enhance AI systems. We're also joined by UK Associate Professor and Ashland Oil Research Professor of Marketing, Dr. Aaron Garvey. Dr. Garvey's research into branded product consumption, consumption decision-making, and others have been published in several academic journals. Before earning his PhD at Penn State, he received his BA from the University of Kentucky, where he also minored in computer science. Thank you both so much for being here tonight. Obviously, you all are both very well-versed in this subject, but I just want to start as sort of, for those who may be listening who don't know anything about AI, we heard it get broken down just a little bit at the beginning, but sort of from a general sense, what can people expect from it?
What a very good first question, and what a complicated one, surprisingly enough. We have a joke in computer science that anything that we don't know how to classify otherwise is AI. So, yeah, that's not very helpful, I suppose.
All-encompassing.
Yeah, all-encompassing. But if I had to define it succinctly, it is an artificially intelligent system is one that is able to reason about its environment and come up with decisions based on evidence that it's seen in that environment. Very broad, but it's a very broad field.
Dr. Garvey, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, as Quinn mentioned in the opening piece, I think that AI, the real impact that it's going to have is the convergence of AI with a few other technologies that have really arisen over the past, say, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there are there's some folks, there's a gentleman, Dr. Schwab from the World Economic Forum. He makes this argument that we're in the fourth wave of the Industrial Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and that it's really being driven by AI, the convergence of AI, predominantly by AI, but also the availability of big data, mm-hmm. and AI being able to analyze that big data by the cloud, mm-hmm. and by just the ubiquity of high-speed internet access pretty much everywhere globally now.
Right.
And those four factors are all kind of coming together, and together they're leading to automation, huge jumps in productivity and knowledge worker space, and also in physical space that are really going to change things over the next 5 years.
Right. And from a timeline perspective, you sort of brought up maybe, you know, 10 years ago is mm-hmm. when you started seeing this sort of boom. How much have you seen it change in that time period? And is that when it really started to become popular, or has that been just more recent years?
I mean, Brent, you could probably speak more to like AIs, AI specifically, like how it's evolved.
Right. So let's see. I did have an exact date before, but of course I've forgotten it. The big boom happened, I'd say probably 5-6 years ago, mm-hmm. With the advent of deep learning and really with our improved capability to do image classification and image captioning. So this is something that was 5, 6, 7 years ago, incredibly difficult for us to do. But then here comes deep learning that says, I got this. I can do this for you. And just like blows all the other approaches that we had up to that point out of the water. It was almost a quantum leap of in terms of performance. And that's really when things started taking off, because people saw that and they said, oh, all of these things that I had in my mind that might not have been possible, I can do them now.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of led us to where we are right now.
And from a business standpoint, obviously mm-hmm. that was huge, economically speaking.
Oh, yes. Because in a lot of business applications, you're dealing with, and I apologize, I'm going to throw out some jargon here, but you're dealing with these like high-dimensional problems. You've got even just analyzing people. Let's take me for an example. There are many things that might influence why I would buy certain products, and having to take all of these different features into account is something that it was just very difficult for us to do before. But now we can reason over all of these many features that describe me, the person. So questions that we couldn't answer before, now possible.
Yeah, it's used all over business. So, you know, to mm-hmm. identify what kind of maybe product attributes people might like,
mm-hmm.
To figure out credit risk when you're going to loan somebody money, to figure out new employees, whether or not they're going to be successful at their job.
Mm-hmm.
It's being used in a lot of different ways.
So how did we sort of see that shift from maybe the more computer science aspect into more business everyday life aspect? Was that gradual, or sort of one invention sort of changed the normalcy of AI?
I mean, so it was this convergence of these several different technologies. And the deep learning, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I've had it explained to me is that it's kind of a black box. So like the big innovation was that beforehand, you kind of had to have an algorithm. You had to have an idea of how something works. So I basically, maybe you would draw upon some consumer behavior research to figure out, here's mm-hmm. a model of preference for a product. And we think that preference is based upon price, and we think that it's based upon TV screen size and resolution, and we're going to try and figure out what will incentivize somebody to buy the product. Well, if I understand right, deep learning is kind of a black box. We feed it a lot of information, and then it can optimize preference, basically all product offers for preference, but we don't really know. We can't really look in the box too easily to figure out what it's doing, but we don't really have to feed it all of these prior assumptions mm-hmm. about what people like about TVs. It just kind of figures it out
just
based
knows.
Upon the data. And you can apply that approach to almost
to any
anything.
Business, right?
Yeah, and especially with the amount of data that mm-hmm. That is available for pretty much any business, right? Any business operating online, any e-commerce, mm-hmm. they've got huge amounts of data, and they can actually.
So is that why when I click on one certain website and click on one pair of shoes, that pair of shoes shows up as an Instagram ad later?
Right, just chases you across
happens?
The internet.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't escape Google.
No,
will find you.
It knows. It knows everything. Well, we briefly brought that up, this idea up there in terms of this sort of transition into the more business side of things. And one of the largest grocery store chains, Kroger, is already experimenting with new artificial technologies being implemented into their newer stores. WRFL reporter Taylor Savage explains what consumers can now expect.
Kroger, America's largest grocery store chain, has partnered with Microsoft to create a pair of high-tech grocery stores. The stores, located in Washington and Ohio, are filled with digital shelf labels and image recognition cameras and aim to create a retail environment that's easier for both customers and retail employees to navigate. The two companies also hope to use their digital signage to sell targeted ads based on customer demographics. They began a partnership with British online grocer Ocado to help Kroger automate its warehouses and use artificial intelligence to strengthen its bottom line. Ocado claims to have the world's most sophisticated automated grocery warehouses and has worked with Uber to test delivery options. The companies announced they will open 3 new warehouses that Ocado will operate, followed by another 17 in the next 3 years. Ocado's warehouses are run by robots that are powered by machine learning algorithms to navigate around the warehouse and pick products for orders. With this investment and access to Ocado's technology, Kroger will get products to stores more efficiently. Separately, Microsoft has also been working on a cashier-free store system, which works using cameras mounted in each shopping cart to track items. Reporting for WRFL, I'm Taylor Savage.
Well, like we just heard, these are huge companies that we're talking about here, the Krogers, the Microsofts, the Ubers. What sort of benefits do you think that artificial intelligence offers to such a large company in that regard? Dr. Harrison, we'll start with you.
So I'd have to say that it really gives you the opportunity to, and this might sound weird, but to connect with your customer. Mm-hmm. It can be very difficult for me, so I don't have a psychology background. I don't know why people do anything. But if I can take your purchase history, which if I'm a big company, of course I've got your purchase history, plug it into my AI system, my machine learning algorithm, and it can tell me a little bit about who you are, I can better help facilitate you getting what you want. I can show you things that you might like that you might not have known that you would like, and that sounds super creepy, but from a business perspective, this is invaluable, like,
right,
company-to-customer interface.
But also from a business perspective, how much of an advantage do these huge companies have over the more local retailers that would never be able to have the financial need or the financial, you know, resources to sort of put that information out there?
Yeah, I think that's really, it's very substantial, right? So when you look at the amount, I mean, really what you're doing there is you're getting some very profound knowledge about your customer and about the market that should allow you to make much better decisions and at the end of everything, make a lot more money. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have access to these resources, it's a competitive disadvantage.
Right. And you bring up an interesting point there, and it sort of goes back to our previous discussion about, okay, I click on one thing and then it sort of follows me forever. Mm-hmm. In terms of just like consumer response, I mean, to me personally, that freaks me out, but it also makes me buy more. So I understand sort of, you know, the angle of it, but at another, you know, we've seen a lot of privacy issues lately. We have the Facebooks, we have the other controversies that are coming up. From a consumer perspective, how happy do you think people are with this sort of almost breach of information, private information?
There's a lot of discussion around that and a fair amount of debate too. The consensus that a lot of people are starting to land on is that most people have become a bit numb to privacy concerns, mm-hmm, just given how long it has been that we've known that, say, Google and Amazon and Microsoft have very personal information about us that's personally identifiable and attached, mm-hmm, to us. So it's currently almost a sailed ship, mm-hmm, that privacy concerns are kind of peaked maybe about 5 years ago, the debate or the discussion, and mm-hmm, and folks have almost moved on past.
And you don't necessarily see that tide sort of turning. Like it's going to get to some point where we give everything away and then we're like, oh wait, this is too far, and go back.
It could. There's kind of a dark side to it, right? Which is that you can opt out of it. Mm-hmm. Right? You can decide not to participate. I mean, you don't have to be on Facebook right now if you don't
right.
want to. You don't have to be on LinkedIn. You don't have to use Google. But it's pretty tough not to.
Right, right. It's very difficult. Well, we briefly touched on this earlier about sort of that advantage that these large corporations obviously will have over the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. In the year 2000, e-commerce only made up less than 1% of total retail sales. But 18 years later, in 2018, they now made up 14.25% of retail sales. The new age of online businesses has completely taken over the retail market of big box stores and moved them online or out of business, period. WRFL reporter Quinn Brown explains why some retailers say convenience is the key for most consumers.
According to the Internet Retailer, U.S. Commerce Department, retail sales have experienced an exponentially negative growth within the last decade. In 2007, e-commerce made up 5% of total retail sales and has increased to 14.25% in 2018. The trend has maintained a steady, slow growth. Some retail giants couldn't handle the lack of consumer spending in retail stores and were forced to shut down. Retail sales lead at Gymboree Clothing, Lauren Cox, explains why she believes many stores like Gymboree are closing.
Nowadays, customers are choosing to online shop versus coming into stores and buying not only our products, but other people's products. This year alone, traffic has been down versus what it's been in the past.
Gymboree isn't the only store at the Fayette Mall in Lexington that decided to shut their doors either.
This year alone, there has been 6 stores that have closed. Some of them due to online shopping. Some of them have moved to other locations to get more foot traffic. But several, like my own store, have had to file for bankruptcy and are losing everything and having to shut the doors for good.
This year, there have already been 4,810 store closures announced. This doesn't mean businesses are completely shutting down, but they are in the process of pursuing new concepts of retail shopping. Reporting for WRFL, I'm Quinn Brown.
Well, we heard there about the specific issues right here in Lexington, but obviously this is a national problem. Stores are closing everywhere, sort of taking the human aspect out of shopping. Now you can do almost all of it online. Dr. Garvey, we'll start with you. What do you think is that driving force there? Obviously, AI plays a part of it. Convenience plays a part of it. But where do those sort of overlap?
There's a lot of reasons that that online retail has really taken off. I mean, some of the most fundamental ones are just the search cost of getting a product that you want, right? So if you search online, it's infinitely easier to find the product you want by typing and then having it brought, you know, basically displayed to you, oftentimes by a very sophisticated algorithm that will show you a product that you might be interested in versus going to multiple stores and trying to find the perfect product. You also have a lot more information about the product, consumer reviews of other people. So instead of just picking up a product on the shelf and hoping that it's going to be good, you can get some kind of social proof about whether or not it's a solid product.
Right. And of course, just the price comparison, you can look up several different websites right at once and say, this is the one I can get for the best price, instead of just buying whichever one comes right in front of you at the store at the mall. How much of sort of the blame do you think is getting put on consumers versus maybe these companies just simply aren't adapting to the times? Where does that blame sort of fall there?
I mean, is there blame in someone just acting rationally and in their self-interest? I don't know if I would say that there's blame. Definitely some consumers, it's difficult, right? It's difficult to, if you have a superior way to get products that you want for a better price, it's difficult to just say, no, I'm going to support the local economy. I mean, it's a noble thing to do, but it's very difficult to actually do it.
Right.
Like, I feel if you're ever in the situation where you think to yourself, you know what, I'm going to blame my customers for this.
Right.
They should have been better. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you're heading down a road that no one wants to go down. Like, you can't dig yourself out of that hole if suddenly your customers are the ones that turned on you.
Right.
No, you do have to adapt. Like, the world that we live in is, from a customer perspective, it's about convenience. It's about variety, being able to see all of the information in front of you. And the fact of the matter is, if I go to Best Buy to buy, what was I looking for the other day? A mouse. I needed a computer mouse. And I had a model in mind, and I go and I say, hey, can I get this mouse? And they tell me, oh, this is only available online.
Right.
Why do I need to go into the store?
Right.
So,
totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And the other issue there sort of kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier, though, those big businesses versus the small ones. Do you sort of see a shift almost in the use of AI in local retail businesses to also sort of push their products online? Or is that going to just stay up there with the Amazons, the Microsofts of the world?
So actually, one of the benefits of this kind of golden age of AI that we find ourselves in is that it is easier than ever for anybody to get access to sophisticated machine learning tools that they can use to analyze their own data. Like, you, with very minimal, like, computer science expertise, you can go download some pre-trained models and be learning, like, I'd say in about an hour with very little, like, or with all the support of the internet available to you if you need to. So I think that the explanation of, oh, these smaller companies don't have access to this kind of power is quickly kind of becoming obsolete.
There's really no excuse at this point.
Right. And I hate to put it that way because it sounds really, really mean.
Right.
But the tools are out there. You just have to look at look for them and be willing to, you know, put in the time to. Yeah.
There are a lot of services. I mean, Amazon even offers some.
Oh, yeah.
That people can purchase. I do think that retailers, I think that and you'll see this with all the major, so Best Buy, you see it with Target, you see it, all the major retailers are becoming, they're becoming hybrid online and brick and mortar retailers. And I think that the days of the pure brick and mortar store that has no online presence, that doesn't use online to drive foot traffic to the store,
right,
and it doesn't use the store to drive online sales,
right,
that's a different era. You're now in the era of where everything has a at the same time an online and a brick and mortar presence.
And even from a marketing standpoint, you can't market without an online presence. You know, putting an ad in the paper is not going to do what putting an ad on Instagram is going to do.
Very true.
Well, as the decline in retail business continues to decline, it also means the decline in employment opportunities for workers in those brick and mortar retail sectors. However, artificial intelligence may pose a threat to people's jobs at all levels of employment. Reporter Taylor Savage details what the future of employment looks like for people in this job sector.
A McKinsey & Company study found that 30% of tasks and 60% of occupations could be computerized. This means these companies would need human employees to help run their businesses. Their jobs will be replaced with artificial intelligence programs that will perform the same tasks as the workers. AP correspondent Ben Thomas details the type of jobs most likely at risk if companies chose the AI route. This doesn't mean that all jobs will go extinct. In fact, technology has created more jobs than it has replaced. There will still be more jobs that most people will be able to maintain because of the job's importance, but people will have to learn how to adapt to the new age of artificial intelligence. I'm Taylor Savage, reporting for WRFL-FM.
An interesting point there that I want us to sort of reference, and I saw you nodding your head along there. It talks about sort of getting rid of these lower jobs, but they're coming back in the technology sector. But when you think about it, the level of education and expertise and skill is often very different from what it might have been as a factory worker to what it is for someone, you know, who's going to try to make this jump into the technology sector. How much does that affect the job market?
Yeah, it's a big problem, and it's one that's it's going to become more prominent over the next few years, where there definitely is, as Taylor was saying, there's fear about there's going to be a reskilling or an upskilling problem with regards to new jobs. So there actually is anticipated that AI will globally drive a lot of incremental jobs.
Right.
You will have more jobs than you used to. There will be demand for those jobs, at least.
Right.
However, there's real fear that those jobs, if you look at where they're at, they're in analytics. They're in being a developer. They're in very high skill.
They're in things you need a college degree for.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at the U.S., 68% of adults, U.S. adults, do not have a college degree.
Right.
So, if you've got a lot of new jobs that, at a minimum, are going to require a college degree, maybe even say a STEM degree, that's a challenge.
Right.
That's a real challenge if a lot of those jobs go away and you need a STEM degree to actually have one of these new jobs.
Right. So kind of going off that point, do you think there should sort of be like almost a fear among workers that, oh, AI is out to take my job, even though that job isn't necessarily going to be the same?
I don't know if there should be, but there definitely is among some. I know, say, if you look at the truckers union, there's a lot of fear that those jobs are going to be going away over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, Dr. Harrison.
Oh yeah, we've been we see this a lot. So we work with GE and factory workers, and you see this fear all the time when we talk about potentially automating some of the more like dangerous or riskier jobs that these people engage in. And they are warranted to some degree. Like, if this is how you make your livelihood, if this is what you know how to do, and then a computer system comes in and takes it, it might be very difficult for you to reskill, which is the common mantra that that we tell people. It's like, oh, you will reskill, you will get a better job, it'll be safer, and it'll be fine. But that can be very difficult, and I find that that kind of response to be maybe a little tone deaf.
Right.
One of the places where I think there's major opportunity is that in some of these dangerous areas and these more dangerous jobs, there's an interest in not doing completely away with the human element. There are these things called human in the loop algorithms or processes where you have a human there acting as a fail-safe. So if things were to go wrong, that would the human could step in and take control with our infinite intelligence and creativity.
Right. More so than a computer.
Right, more so than a computer. the problem with this is that, again, it's not a solution because not everybody can be that human in the loop. And so there's still a problem that we very much need to address.
And it still might just be one human in the loop as opposed to 10 previous workers.
Exactly.
Do you think that has sort of created a negative connotation with AI and sort of where the future is heading in that direction?
Among some people, yes. It is, some people see it as a threat to their livelihood. And so I think that's, so for all of the talk about robots taking up and overthrowing the world and us living under Terminator rule, I think the more real worry is in these kinds of like who gets left in the dust?
Right.
So when the train of automation comes through, who gets left behind? And that's the scary part for me.
Right. We made a nice little T-chart today. We talked about a lot of the pros earlier, but this, of course, is a huge con. Mm-hmm. When you're sort of weighing these, okay, these are the benefits, these are the consequences of AI, where do you see that line falling in terms of this is how much good it's doing, but this is how much harm it could create? I'll start with you.
So, being in computer science and like researching AI, and I'm an optimist, so I see it definitely like weighing out for the good. I think the things that we can do now that we couldn't do even 5-10 years ago, and you mentioned a lot of these at the beginning of the show, medical diagnoses, for example, that is an area where AI has the ability to, or the potential, to really do some good. Diagnosing cancers that humans might not have been able to. Mm-hmm. Like, that has the potential to save thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives. But I think that we can't be blinded by all of the potential upsides and ignore the downsides, ignore the limitations.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, and AI can be used to do some wonderful things. I know that I think that Amazon is funding or kind of launched a nonprofit that looks at potential famine sites and actually uses AI to determine where at-risk locations could be and then preemptively go in and try to provide support to those regions.
Mm-hmm. And stories like that show obviously how powerful this could be.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even in the long term, even barring kind of the great things that AI can accomplish that it would take us much longer as humans to figure out, I think if you kind of step back, in the short term, it is going to be very disruptive. You're going to have this reskilling issue, but it is going to dramatically increase productivity and quality of life and just our technological capabilities. Mm-hmm. So it really is going to make for, in the long term, make for a much better world.
Right.
There might be some rough patches, kind of like what you saw in the first wave of the Industrial Revolution. There's some rough patches as people have to find new jobs and everything has to sort itself out.
Right.
But it's definitely a big time of economic change.
Right. Well, we've taken sort of this big, scary idea of artificial intelligence. I mean, that phrase, it's intimidating to people. Mm-hmm. For those who are listening, what do you hope their takeaway is from this show? And what do you hope that they've learned about AI just sort of on a more specific scale?
So I hope that everybody learned that AI is not about robots coming to kill all humans. That's really what I want to, that's my soapbox that I always want to stand on, is that the real danger of AI is not in them suddenly deciding that you are obsolete and killing you, but it's more in these kind of policy issues that come along with it. And I think there's more potential for AI to do unintentional harm than intentional harm, but that's me.
Yeah, I agree with Brent. I'm not worried about Skynet. But
not yet.
but AI itself, I think it is going to be a really powerful tool, and I think that just human life in general is going to be much better over the coming decades because of it. Mm-hmm. There's just, I can see where there's a lot of uncertainty around the economic implications on a personal level, mm-hmm. but at a macro level, it's going to do a lot for us.
Right. Well, it's a topic we could talk about for hours, but unfortunately, we are just about out of time today. We hope this discussion and the research presented today by our experts was informative in understanding artificial intelligence and its incoming role in society and in the future of business. Obviously, of course, we want to thank our guests again for coming in today, Dr. Aaron Garvey and Dr. Brent Harrison. Thank you both so much for taking time out of your day to come hang out with us at WRFL. Join us again next week as we discuss active shooter training. For WRFL Campus Voices, I'm Maggie Davis. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.